Hi, Kathy here. Starting Family Flowers Only felt like learning a new language overnight. Branding, websites, marketing. It gets overwhelming fast. That is why having the right tools is everything. For millions of businesses like mine, that tool is Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world, helping turn big ideas into real-life brands. If you're worried about design, Shopify's ready-to-go templates make it easy to build a beautiful online store. If you need a hand, their AI tools can help write product descriptions, enhance images, and even generate discounts. And if people haven't heard about your brand yet, Shopify makes it simple to run email and social campaigns to reach new customers. Plus, their award-winning 24/7 support is always there if you get stuck. So stop asking what if and start asking why not. Turn those dreams into and give them the best shot at success with Shopify. Sign up for your €1 per month trial at shopify.ie. That's shopify.ie and see what you can build with Shopify by your side.
Family Flowers Only. Thanks to flowers.ie. 5-star luxury flowers. Approved by you. Delivered with care.
Before we get into the heart of today's episode, I'm delighted to welcome our new sponsor, flowers.ie. Now, given the name of this podcast, it's a partnership that just makes sense. If you're looking to send something special, these guys are the highest rated florist in Ireland with over 15,000 5-star Trustpilot reviews. They do proper luxury flowers and fast and efficient express delivery in County Dublin and surroundings, as well as next day delivery to all counties. But the absolute game changer is their video approval. They actually send you a video of your arrangement before it goes out, so you know it's just right. So head over to flowers.ie and use the promo code 5-star for €5 off your order, because it's 5-star luxury flowers, approved by you, delivered with care. Hey everybody, you are welcome back. I am in studio in Galway this week and the lovely Kathleen Barrett has travelled all the way up from Cork on this glorious bank holiday Friday. How are you, Kathleen?
Very well, thank you.
You're welcome to Galway. So we were sitting having the chat before we came in here. We were waiting, so we've got chatting and we've had a catch up. But I suppose now we're going to talk about the reason why you've come up here. And that's to talk about your wonderful husband, Ned. And I would love to hear, where did you meet Ned first?
Well, we knew each other because my sister married his brother.
Oh.
They were already going out together before we
Very good.
So we just happened to get a spin from the same guy to a dancing in a skein. When I was 15, he was 17. And he was a kind of a bit of a wild one.
And caught your eye.
Yeah, in a way, I suppose. First night, yeah, we did. Yeah. He went away for a few pints after landing. Mm. We went away into the dance hall and that was it.
He
came over after and we were together ever since. I was 15, he was 17.
God.
And
that was the way back then. Like I hear that a lot of brothers and sisters get married, like two sisters to two brothers, that kind of thing.
And the strange thing about it was his parents, his father and his father's sister married a brother and sister as well.
Stop.
So this was the second generation of it happening. Yeah.
God.
Yeah. So.
So you met, so he was, you know, you were kids, 15 and 17 when you think about it now. But I suppose you started going out then. What was Ned's character like?
Oh, Ned was wild.
Yeah.
Coincidentally, my mother was one of the first bus drivers in Ireland and she had taken them to school.
Wow.
So she had history of them before they met us.
She
had put him off the bus to take a mouse out of a matchbox or to empty his pockets from rice. So she had the history of the Barretts before she left her two daughters.
So did she pull a face when you said she?
No, she didn't. She just said to me, you know, now we're already connected to that family, so you'll have to not treat him right now, like
put a tumble of spanner in the works there for your sister.
Yeah, More or less, yeah.
Oh. Yeah. So obviously it went well from the start. You got together, and when did you get married, or how did that play out for you?
We were together for 5 years and we got pregnant,
mm-hmm.
and we were over the moon. It was, in our case, we just couldn't have been happier. So we arranged our wedding, but we were broke to the ropes, so we couldn't afford a wedding. So I had heard about somebody getting married in Knock, and I thought, do you know, wouldn't that make it special? So we went up the night before, and his parents came, and his mother, she was mad to go to Knock, but she was a lovely country woman. So they all persuaded her father for him to go, for her to go. So we all went to Knock, and my family came up the day of the wedding. There were 17 of them at the wedding, and we had the ceremony in Knock, came back and had a meal, and then we waved them all off home. Oh. And that was the 4th of August. And sadly, his mam passed away suddenly on the 23rd of August.
Oh, God.
At the age of 63. Yeah.
Jeez, sudden, yeah.
So we kind of felt we did something good for her. She got her wish to go to Knock.
Oh.
So he was shell-shocked at the loss of his mam. And he asked me, when they were closing the coffin, could he put the coin?
Oh.
You know, there's a coin you exchange. And he said, can we put this in with my mam from the two of us? It will only bring us luck. And to this day, I firmly believed that's what we had, nothing. And we've come a long way, and my children have all a good life.
Yeah.
And I think it was down to his hard work and I suppose my support.
Yeah.
But we had a wonderful life. He was no saint, don't get me wrong.
I know, but
like
I'm
every
sure.
fella, I'm going to the pub and forgetting to come home and come and collect me and this and that. But we grew together. We just grew together.
Yeah, what's that like when, you know, our age group now, where, you know, we're our generation, you know, a lot of us, like I met my husband at, well, actually I met him quite young, but then we broke up again. But I met him, we got back together when I was 33, do you know? And then you hear people, you know, of another generation that meet at 15, 16 and they go the distance, like, you know?
Yeah, I think I remember one night we were discussing that, and Ned worked with farmers, so he worked long hours. And he used to always say to me, because the time we have together is quality, we're not with each other 24/7. So you value, summer nights mightn't get home until 11 o'clock, you know? Winter nights were different. He'd be home early and he'd always go for his pint. And I just think when we got married, we probably didn't know each other enough, but we grew to nearly being one.
Yeah.
And it meant an awful lot to me, actually. That's partly the reason I'm here, because I wanted to tell my story so that people will understand. I thought I couldn't live a day without him. I firmly believed my heart would just stop. And I'm here 10 years on and I'm stronger for it. Yeah. I wish my story was different. I'd give my right hand to have it different, but it isn't. But what I'm trying to explain about, I can feel his presence. And he used to always say, I'm here for a long time, or a good time, not a long time. I used to be giving out to him. But a few months before he died, he wasn't sick. He had no ailments. He had no thing. But this is the point I'm trying to bring about, how that you have a connection with someone. And even if they're gone, they're not. My eldest son came into the sitting room a few months before Ned passed. And Ned was a great man for going to the local and coming home with gossip. And they'd be, with something daft happening in the pub. I used to say he was living Coronation Street while I was watching it. But anyway, Ed came into the sitting room one day and he said, Dad, you never told me about that bit of gossip. And Ned said, Ed, it wasn't my story to tell. And Edward said, but I bet you told Mam. And he said, Ed, bye. That was the same thing as telling myself. And that hung with me. And it's brought me to where I am now. Anytime I need him, I say, Ned, where are you? and these wonderful things have happened to me. So I know he's there. And, like, to say that he knew it as well. We'd only, if we were somewhere we didn't want to be, there'd only be an eye connection. We were gone. We could read each other's thoughts. It was just, it was for all the world, like, you just grew so
entwined. That you're like one.
We often say we'd drive to Dublin. The first time you'd talk is when you'd say, have your money for the toll. You know, there was never a pressure. There was never a need. It was just so, like what I see, there's been an awful lot of people and widowed in our area, young widows. And like what I really feel after 10 years, I want to tell them, if you believe enough in the love you shared and the way and the energy you had, that's not gone.
Mm.
It's there, but you have to believe it and you have to trust in it. Because from the minute he was gone, because I would be that way. I do accept dreams and signs. And from the minute he was gone, things just started happening, that there was no way in the wide earthly world that he wasn't there, that he's not even here. Even this morning, look, this morning I set off coming up here. And Ned was big into nature and birds and animals. And as I drove out the gate, I kind of said, "Jeez, be with me now today, Ned." Four robins, two with either side, flew down the main road until I reached the main road. And I just said, wow.
Wow.
And I've had series after series of that through the 10 years. Now, don't get me wrong. I've had bad days. I've had rotten days. I've had everything from everything. But I just think he's...
Yeah. I agree. I think your message is phenomenal. And I'm happy to hear that. And I'm happy that you have that belief, you know. And I'd love to share some more of that in a little while as well. If you're happy, I might go back a little bit and just, as I say, I want to kind of, if it's okay, chat about what happened. Just before we do that, maybe just those years when you were having kids, you know, the years that can be hard, you know, when you're in the thick of it and you have small kids and you're trying to make a few pounds and it's not easy. What were those years like as a couple?
Oh, sure. We came home from the honeymoon and we had bought a mobile home for £400 at the time. I remember the skylight was gone on it, so we only had plastic over it with concrete blocks holding it down. But we had a ball of a time. So then we bought an old cottage and there was electric lights, no sockets, no water, no toilet, no nothing. So we had, the day we moved over there, Ned went over ahead of us with another friend and it was a big open fire with the wheel and the whole lot. He went up on the roof and he pulled a furze brush up through the chimney to clean it. And when he had the fire lighting, we came in and I had the baby with me at the time. And there was, do you remember the long old stools that used to be in old houses? The fire was lighting and the stool was halfway out the floor and he was feeding it in. That was burning away.
Burning the stool.
That was our firing.
Wow.
So we had a few years then when we had no water or anything, but we were in love and we were happy. And
didn't bother you?
No, we had a brilliant time, really enjoyed it. We save up then, like I was being paid monthly at the time because I had gone back working after we moving into that house. So we'd saved in a couple of months and then you buy the next thing. So around October anyway, we had partitioned off a bathroom and we were due to buy the bathroom. So I was going to Cork the following morning to buy the bathroom and I had my month's wages and I put it up in an old press we had and got up in the morning anyway, went for my 300 odd whatever, money gone. Couldn't figure out where it was gone. So the next day it dawned on me, I was after throwing papers into the fire. So Ned went through the fire and he found the silver strips.
Oh no.
If that happened now, I'd be crying. We just laughed.
So
we had to wait until January after Christmas to buy the bathroom suite. So the bathroom suite was delivered, but the bat was cracked. So like we had a history of things, but they never bothered us.
No.
No. So we carried on. We had Susan then. And then we did an extension and we had the other two. And we were as happy as Larry. I was working full time. He was working. And then after about, I don't know, when maybe the last baby was 3 or 4, we both decided to go self-employed. So we kind of came closer at that stage then, because Ned was working locally for farmers and I was working from home. So he used to come home every day at 1:30 for his lunch. So
what did Ned do?
He had his own machine. He was an excavator driver, yeah. And look, it was the night of his funeral was an honour, because all the people that considered him a genius, that knew the ground.
Known far and wide.
Known everything. So
he used to come home for lunch,
He'd come home for lunch. So then time went on and, you know, we were involved with the kids so much. It was mostly I had to do all the driving and running around with them, because Ned would be out late working and whatever.
Would you be working that time when you had the 4 kids?
Yes.
Yeah.
I had a very exceptional boss. He used to let me work from home in the summer when the kids were on holidays, and I could work 5 mornings, and he was very accommodating.
Wow.
Yeah, he was very good. So time went on, and as I say, we went self-employed then, so it was easier. I was able to juggle everything from the home and...
Happy life.
Happy life. Kids started having partners and they'd be bringing him home and the usual. Mm. Everybody happy and buzzing and everything.
What would Ned think now when the daughters landed home with a new man?
Yeah, sure, he'd rise them up. First thing he'd say to Susan's husband now, first thing he came in, he said, "You're sitting in my seat. Who told you could sit there?" Or I'd be running out saying, "Don't park there, Pa. That's Ned's spot." So no, everything was lovely and easy, and he enjoyed the crack with the lads, and you know, everything was great. Then we had a few grandchildren, and that took a lease of life. That changed Ned. He got way softer. Like the kids, my lads would all say, "God, he was a great granddad." Like he just was the coolest granddad. Like,
why does that happen? You see that a lot, where the grandparents just become so soft for the grandkids.
Kids, yeah, yeah.
It's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah, and like he hated Christmas always. He just disliked Christmas. But a few months before he died, we just thought he was after changing. He was after getting so thoughtful. No, he was always thoughtful, but he wouldn't show it as much.
Yeah.
But the thing was, on Christmas Eve, we used to always have the whole lot of them over Christmas Eve, and we do the grandkids' presents before they go home. But the ritual was, the main, it all go to the pub and have 3 or 4 drinks. And one of my son-in-law's doesn't drink. So he was the designated driver and he'd bring them all home. That was done every Christmas for years. But the Christmas that Ned died, Christmas Eve, the lads arrived and they were going out the door, and Ned just turned around and said, "I think we'd stay at home." And that, we were gobsmacked.
Really?
No, we'd stay at home. And turned on the TV and had the fun with the grandkids. And it was after we all were putting different pieces together, and we said, somehow, some way, he had some reason for that.
Yeah.
Because roll on the clock then to New Year's night of 2000, and when the clock was turning to 2016, we were sitting at home, the two of ourselves, watching the ring in at the new year. And we were sitting there having a drink. And at about 12:30 anyway, I was on my phone, maybe 1:45. And Ned was flicking through channels. And he loved ABBA. I mean, he was actually, he'd go up in the middle of a wedding looking for ABBA. Like, so anyway, ABBA came on the television. And they were playing that song, you know, "I love you, I do,
do I do, I do, I do, yeah."
And I saw him getting up and I said, "See, I'm going out for more drink now." And the next thing, totally not Ned, he asked me to dance. And we danced in front of the fire. And the only time we ever had done that was 30 odd years earlier, when the night we brought our youngest home. And the song was going on, and he just whispered into my ear, you're loved for the rest of your life. It was so strange that I never had questioned why he said that night. We had been at a funeral. He went to someone's funeral and I waited in the car. And on our way home, we'd always go for a drink. I used to joke, actually. I say, I look up the death notices to see, can I get a night out? Because he changes gullows for funeral. So when we pass in our local, I said, do you want to go in? He said, I leave it entirely up to yourself. Totally out of character. He'd always say, we'll go in for one. And we came home and he had his tea by the fire. And then that was the night before he died, a few days after. But the dance was New Year's night.
Wow.
And the night before he died, then the 4th of January, that was the funeral. And he was at, and we came home. He had a slice of toast and a fried egg in front of the fire. And I said, do you ever get sick of that? And he said, no, it suits the system. We went down to bed. Nothing unordinary. I got up about 8 o'clock. I was working for someone then for a while at that stage. And I came down the kitchen. I said, your Renee doesn't have to. He was working in my son's land that time. Renee always wanted a farm. And my son had just bought land 2 years before Renee died. And it was a heap of rock. And Renee had turned it into the most beautiful place under the sun, green fields. And everyone was talking about it, you know. So he wasn't in any hurry to work. So I just looked up at the clock and I says, what the hell am I doing here? So I went down about 8:30 and I says, will I get in again? And he said, do so. And I got in and we were kind of just holding hands. We just held hands. He wouldn't hold your hand around the place, but he would in bed. And we must have fallen asleep. And the next day I woke about 9:30 and I looked at the clock and I said, Jesus, look at the time. We'd want to get out. So I said, let go of my hand until I get out. And I jumped out of bed and I turned around and I said, how are you after Christmas? I said, I'm very tired. And he said, not too bad. And I went into the bathroom at the end of the bed. And like I said, I had these kind of thoughts and dreams that often came true. And at some stage previous, I had a kind of a deja vu moment in that bathroom where I thought I was sitting there. It came into my head that something will happen, Ned, when I'm here. Put it out of my head. That morning, I was just finished on the bathroom and I heard the groan and the yawn. And the first thought was, Jesus, is he going back to sleep? And as I got up and just caught myself in the mirror, I knew, I said, this is it. This is it. And I walked out and he was stretching and yawning, not yawning, smiling. And he kind of was going back. And I said, Nate, what's wrong? And he still had a smile on his face. I thought he was joking. And I walked around the bed and I tapped him on the face. And he just, the eye flickered. It never opened. He just laid back. And I knew then. So I ran straight. Our mobiles used to work in the bedroom for some reason. And I didn't have the air code. They were only new at the time. And I ran and I got the house phone and I rang the doctor. He was just 10 minutes away inside my room. And I said, Shane, you got to come. Ned is dying. He said, Kathleen, he's not dying. I said, Shane, he's dying. So he said, did you ring the ambulance? I said, no. He said, I'll do it, but keep the phone near you. So he said, they'll ring you back. So I went away down. I was running around half naked at this stage. And the phone rang and they told me how to do CPR. And I was doing it. And I was trying to say, come on, Ned, I love you. And the girl on the other end of the phone kept saying, no, just count to 30. Keep doing it. And about 10 minutes after, I heard the doctor's car. And I grabbed something and threw it over me to open the door. And he shouted, you go back in. And I went in and Shane came in and he said, fair play, Kathleen. He's still with us. We still have a pulse. And he put me doing something else. I can't remember something in a case. And with that, my son, oldest son, came up the drive. I was after ringing the three eldest, came up the drive. He had come all the way from Cork in a big van. And he was there and we couldn't figure out where the ambulance was. And Shane shouted, Eddie, get in here. They had gone to school together. They were from the same class. So Eddie came in and they asked me to leave, and they were working it. So they shouted me then to go out and stand on the road because the ambulance was coming. So I went down the drive. I was in my dressing gown and I was standing, and next thing Eddie was running out shouting, "Where are they? Where are they?" And my friend was going down the road and she saw me and she stopped and she came in. So she made me go back in. She said she'd wait for the ambulance. But that went on and they were out and in. And then the end lady came out and he says, "For God's sake, I'll drive to meet you. Just tell me where you are." And with that, we heard sergeants coming 50 minutes later. Jeez. Two emergency services pulled up the drive at the same time. And I was standing in the hall and they passed me in. And the doctor came out and I went out onto the porch and he followed me out and he said, "Kathleen, too little, too late. If they bring him back now, he wouldn't want it, nor would you." So we knew it was a waste of time. Now, the emergency services did stay inside and did stay working. But then they came out and I came back into the hall and bought lots of lads passed me out the door. And they never looked at me. They never said sorry. They never said nothing. And I was so cross over that. It took me months to discover those poor lads were mortified. They were being driven around the country by someone from Athlone. No local. Long ago, you'd ring the guards, they'd meet you at the cross. They just couldn't look me in the face because they, friends told us after that they had seen the ambulances around. One woman came out and asked them who they were looking for. And they said the town land, but they couldn't tell her the name because of GDPR. And she was only up the road. But anyway, look, roll the clock.
Essentially, they got lost.
They got lost, yeah. They were driving all the roads. And after the doctor's office told me that Shane told them when he left the office in McCroom, he heard the siren and he said to the girls in the office, "They're on my tail. The ambulance are on my tail." So it turned out after these guards came and my son-in-law's father was an undertaker and they were lovely. They came and they looked after everything that morning straight away. And my youngest daughter, someone rang where she was working in a part-time job and told her off the phone. She drove from McCroom. She was only in her mid-20s. And she drove out and came in the door and he was gone. And it was like a dream. All his brothers and sisters came and we'd wait for the guards. And this very funny story, this was the first episode after him going that I knew he was there. That friend that had stopped with me used to always go walking with me in the mornings. And it was a devil. He used to say, "Would you ever get better T-shirts? I can see right through them when it's a cold morning." And anyway, Rosemary had got me clothes out the hot press, but she never got me a bra. And they put the son-in-laws and my children carried the coffin, shouldered it down the drive and down the road. They walked after the hearse. And I was walking with Rosemary one side, and I think it was my daughter-in-law on the other side. And I got an awful fit of laughing. She said, "What are you laughing at?" I said, "I've just heard Ned's voice saying, 'You're out walking, you've no brow.'" And I thought, Jesus, did that just happen? So they put him into the hearse then, and rather than going the main road, they drove up past the farm so that they could stop where the digger was. Oh. And the guard led us down to the main road, and then the hearse went to the hospital and we came home.
That was all in a matter of how long?
3 or 4 hours.
So you'd woke up that morning?
Yeah. Holding hands. And by 1, 2 o'clock,
he was gone.
It was gone. It was over. It was done.
Jesus, how do you like, what sort of a shock is that?
For some reason, I remember the doctor calling out in the evening and our house was full, but we knew Ned wasn't coming back there that night because the postmortem. But all his friends, I went out. I was very good. I went out and I went up the acre with the phone and he had two very close friends. I said, "I better ring them." And I rang one I couldn't get. The second guy said, Pat. I said, Nate's gone. Nate's dead. And he said, Kathleen, what are you talking? I said, Nate's dead. He said, Jesus, was that who the ambulance were looking for? I rang my boss at the time. I was just working with a construction company. I rang him and I told him he'd have known Nate very well. He said, no, Kathleen. He said, get Edward to ring me. This isn't making sense. I kind of went into able to cope.
Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. And we stayed in that house that night. Then we had a house built, which was an investment, but I put everything into it. I always wanted to move there. And coincidentally, our eldest son had moved in there for about 10 years. And we had everything in it. Everything from the hairdryer to the colour televisions to the... We had everything finished. And Nate said to me, about 3 months before he died, again, totally out of character, I wronged you. We should have moved to the new house. When Ed moves out and he'll get his planning permission, we'll move up. He never had given me a commitment to moving. It was always, yeah, we might. And that kind of gave me the freedom to be able to decide to continue that journey, because
yeah,
he had given the permission. Yeah. But anyway, he was brought out and we waked him in that house above at Edwards, because it had loads of room. And we waked him there from Wednesday until he was going to the church Thursday night. The local GA club came out. There was lights put up. The whole place was just... The parish was in shock. I knew Nate was popular, but I never realised how popular. And we waked him at the home all day Wednesday, all day Thursday. So we were due then to go to the church for 5:30. And I remember they saying we'll go earlier. We were over there about 4:45. And the heavens opened. It lashed rain. I never saw rain like it. And we were inside. And then someone came in and said, the crowds are off the radar. The traffic were on the main road, dividing the traffic. And we were there from 5:00, as I said, about 9:30.
Yeah.
Crowds coming in, and they were drenched, absolutely. That priest came out, he said to me, do you want to break? Do you want to come back? And I said, no, I'm fine. I was able to do it, I just don't know how. But one thing that stuck in my mind was people he had worked for, farmers, in their 80s and 90s, they crying, because who would they get now? But one girl in particular, I mean, like, I'm amazed I remember these things. But about 9:30, Bridge Cockery, she's a dual footballer and hurler for Cork. She's won 14 or 15 All-Irelands. She came in standing in front of me and she was saturated. I had trained her as an under-12 football team. And she came in and sympathised with me and gave me my hug and whatever. And she was getting married the following morning. And I thought to myself, seemingly she started queuing 1/2 mile down the road. Oh. And she stood in the pouring rain to get in. And that, I think, gave me the strength to realise, look what people are doing. Following day was much the same. The crowds were unreal as well. And so we got through it. They all, he had a lot of nephews and they were all there. They shouldered the coffin all the way down from the church to the graveyard. And then an old-fashioned thing that's done from time to time, when they had the coffin put in the ground, they were nearly fighting with each other, take the shovels off each other. They all closed back the grave, all the lads. I mean, it was just an honour. They all had stayed up during the night as well. That was funny too, because some of them were having, as they said, tea or tea. Tea was whiskey in the cup.
Okay.
So they were up all night and they were all there again the following day. And it was just such an honour to see so many young boys And they were shocked because it was 12 stone weighs, no ailment, happy as Larry. 55, yeah. Devil like a crack, they all, the lads used to. And just to see all of them, and they all wanting to do their bit, do you know?
It's touching, isn't it?
It was an honour, really was an honour to see the way they rallied round. Do you know, to some things like that, you realise how good family are.
And community, you know? Yeah.
You know,
but Ireland is, the way they handle a funeral is, oh, yeah, makes you so emotional, doesn't it?
The house was full of food. Mm. There was people frying in the kitchen that were only acquaintances, you know. And I think all of that carried you.
Yeah.
Relations home from England. And you were, oh yeah, Edward, then they had got the farm, as Edward said, he bought it for his dad and now his dad was gone. But they were after putting up a shed just before Christmas and the animals had to be in for Christmas. Edward, Ned used to drive Edward mad, give him orders. And Edward would say, who's the boss here, like? But there was doors off the back of the shed, never came before Christmas. And the night before Ned died, he said to Edward, well, you get onto your men and sort the doors. So Edward rang your men. And the following day, or 2 days later, Edward was standing in the graveyard with the undertaker, arranging about the grave. And the trailer and the man went down with the doors. He rang me and he said, ma'am, your man has gone down with the doors. What will I do? I said, go after him and go over and put up the doors. It was his last wish. And my brother-in-law, who was married to my sister, and my other, Ned's other brother, Jimmy, they told us that their parents had a grave with three graves and that did we like Ned to go in near his mum and dad. So that made it easy again. Because you felt he had so much confidence in giving his mother his coin that he was going home with someone. So he was buried there. And that again was a comfort. But it's just, that's the way it happened. I suppose life kind of took over then. I was on remote control and I was running to the solicitor and I was doing all the stuff that there was probably no need to do. But it kept me going. And kept me going for about 10 months until I got, I had stage zero cancer 5 years previous, very small, minor, nothing big. And I was due for my 5-year checkup 10 months after Ned dying. And I went in. And for some reason, they didn't even leave me leave the hospital before they told me that it was back and it was more aggressive and it was a different cancer. And that I'd have to have surgery fairly fast.
Gosh.
So I kind of went through that. I looked at the illnesses, actually. The illness carried me. It was harder than, I suppose, my children for they to be thinking, this is it. But when they told me that and when I went in for the surgery, I was content. I was going to die. I was happy. I was going with them.
Really?
Firmly believed this is it. And like, I'm not, I can't do anything about it because it's cancer. So I was prepared. I was going.
So you weren't scared, or you weren't?
No. I was happy, convinced, this is it, I'm going. And
did you want to go?
Oh, at that space and time I did. Mm-hmm. I was just heartbroken. Like I was living, I was surviving. But I had no feeling here, none whatsoever. So to actually have that breast removed and be numbed totally. It was like as if it was meant to happen. I had no feeling there anyway. And I had surgery and they sent away the margins for testing. And then the professor and the surgeon came up and they told me that they had got it all. And it was then I knew I wasn't ready to die. There was a weight went off me. Was, I'm not ready. I'm not to die. I knew then. But if they had told me the other story, I don't know. But I knew then.
Okay.
I wasn't meant to die then. So I was left home. 3 days later, I was back in with sepsis. while I was inside with the sepsis, I got a TIE, which is a mini stroke. And I thought, dear Jesus, what's happening? Like, the humour that we had between us was just so good. I just had to laugh. And I said, during one of the surgeries, then they found I had a breathing problem. So they tested me for sleep apnea. So I had a sleep machine. I was discovered I had something in my bowel, something else wrong. And it was all accumulating. The only thing that was really wrong with me when Nate died was I had a bad knee from a sports injury. But now here I was, the body was giving in, and I just thought something has taken over, you know. But I just went through, and I had my treatment, and I had everything, and it just went on and on. And I used to just say, dear God, was he trying to take me with him? And then I kind of laughed, and I said, well, either that or he was making sure I'd have no one else. Missing a boob, two artificial knees, sleeps with a mask. Who's going to take her on? And only for that humour, I could hear him laughing. I could hear him saying it. And right through all of this, there was different things happening. I remember the early days, the first week or two after he dying, you'd get up and you'd say, what do I do today? Pipe burst under the sink, kitchen flooded. Had to ring a plumber. My day was gone. 2 days later, went to the grave and we had a horse and he was back in a neighbour's wood. And I was saying, what am I going to do? How am I going to pass today? And go back and check the horse came into my head. Horse was after breaking out. We were 3 or 4 hours fencing and getting the horse back in. This was what was happening. And I thought, Nate, are you having a laugh? Like Nate always said when the grandkids were born, don't tell them there's only 7 days in the week. Keep them working. He had this thing. So I thought, Nate, I used to love P.S. I love you. And I said, you man in P.S. I love you. Gave her a holiday. You're giving me more work. So anyway, roll on to Patrick's Day. Just after the first Patrick's Day, my sister said to me, what do you want to do today? I said, just get out of here. So we went down to West Cork to Sheepshead and we had a lovely day. She brought me home. Be fair play, my sisters were great. And I was disappointed none of my own were around. And I had a few glasses of wine. I started Googling houses for sale in West Cork. It happened to be the last seaside place we had been the September previous with my son and his wife and our grandson. And we had spoken about, look at all the property Nama was selling, but we never could afford it. So I saw a house for sale in Kilcrahan, and in my happy state, I Googled the auctioneer and she texts back and she said, I live in the village, I can show it to you tomorrow. And I said, fine, knowing I hadn't a penny to my name. So that time they didn't take any notice of me because I'd sit into the cart and maybe go 2 miles down the road and I could be end up 50 miles away. And I'd just ring them and say, am I right? So I struck off down to see the house and I looked at the house, this beautiful house and beautiful village overlooking the sea. But before I left, I said, I'll have to tell the auctioneer this is pie in the sky. So I told her my story. I said, look, I said, I have no money. I said, this was just a daydream and something to pass today. And she said, that's fine. Don't worry about it. That was a Friday. So on Saturday, I was telling the lads and Susan said, ma'am, if you, the sea was the thing that was saving my life, let's go to the sea continual. So Susan said, ma'am, if you think that that would help you, why don't you go to the bank and see, could you get a loan? So following Monday, I got on to the bank and they said they'd look into it. And on the Wednesday, we had life insurance because we had a mortgage on this property that my son was in. But we had life insurance assigned to that mortgage. And every year, you know, it's indexed, it could go up. But we were so tight. I used to bring it down every year. So at the time, I thought we'd about 90,000 on the loan. So the previous year, I'd reduced it to 90K. So that was all right. roll on the next Wednesday anyway. And I was driving home and I just started talking to Nate in my head. And I said, Nate, the house in West Cork is pie in the sky. I said, 'tis in your hands now if it's going to happen. Really, that was far-fetched. Like, so, and I just says, and by the way, too, I'm a bit strapped. I could do it. Bit of money. Drove up into the house, went down to the hall, and there was a letter on the floor, and I picked it up, and there was a cheque for over €600 from a client that I had totally forgotten owed me money for years. And you know, the strangest feeling went through me. Like, is this really happening? So I just knew there and then there was someone with me. Wow. Went to bed that night, it was Wednesday, and I always remember it was Holy Thursday. The next Thursday that year, they fell one after the other, Patrick's weekend. And at a happiest 8 in the morning, a message came into my phone and I read it. And it was our solicitor, who happened to be a neighbour of ours as well, when I was young. And he said, Kathleen, he said, I don't know why I picked up your folder last night, but he said, I just discovered your mortgage, your loan, life insurance, is not assigned to the mortgage. You can do whatever you like with the money. Jeez, I got up out of bed and I went down to the kitchen and I rang a friend of mine who was an auctioneer. And I said, Tom, you're not going to believe this, I said. I looked at a house yesterday and this morning the solicitor has rang and said, I said, what do I do? Do I pay off my mortgage? But I said, we have a desperate cheap tracker rate. Or would I think about buying the house? And Tom said, Kathleen, I'd go for the house. It's well worth the money. Fully furnished, 9 years old, everything in it. And he said, you'd have a bit of property in West Cork. He said, can you afford to pay the mortgage? Well, I said, I'd have to stay working. So I rang the solicitor's office and I said, could I make an appointment? And she said, next Tuesday. I said, no, it has to be today. So I went into the solicitor. I went in and I told him my story. And I said, what do you think? And he said, I have a friend, retired doctor in that estate. I'm going to ring him. And he went out and he rang me, came back and he said, Kathleen, if you're not buying it, I'll buy it. It is a great bargain. But I said, Sean, I'd be short a lot. He said, how much is that? I said, it's asking 165,000. And he said, but sure, Kathleen, you have that. I said, I haven't. I said, Sean, it's only 90. He said, no, Kathleen, he said, it's 168,000. And I quit. He said, I'm sorry, Kathleen, your life insurance is 168,000. So I came out the door and I rang my eldest son. I said, hey, you're not going to believe this. But I said, life insurance is 168. I said, I think I'll put a bid on the house of West Cork. He said, ma'am, you're going to be broke again. And I said, Edward, do you not think this is the plan that Dad is making sure I'll have to get up and I'll have to work? And we'll have a house in his memory and y'all can use it. I said, I don't want the life insurance money just to live. So he said, ma'am, it is your choice. So before I left the space I was in, I rang the auctioneer and I put a bid of 145 on the house. Came home. I was at home the following morning and my sister called to tell me that Ned's sister was after getting very unwell. And she had a rare disease. It took us a long time to find out she's still alive, thank God. But I just said a prayer to Nate, forget about the house. Just make Anne okay. And my phone rang and I went into the sitting room to take it. And the auctioneer said, if you'll go 155, you'll have the house. I said, right. And I came out and I told my sister. And she kind of thought I was raving. So I went in. After Easter then I went in and I did the transaction. And I'm selling a house at the moment and it's taking about 8 months. They said it would be a couple of weeks. And I came out and I rang another friend of mine. I said, I'm selling you this now. I said, because no one will believe me. If Nate has something to do with this house, I'll have the keys in a week or two. Sure enough, I had the keys by the start of May. And I was down in the house and I did save my life. I had 5 years of somewhere to just nest, and the sea, go to the sea and stand on the pier and let the sea take it. And when I had my house paid for, my solicitor paid for, and my stamp duty, it all came to 168,000.
That's unreal.
So you tell me, Ned had this thing about birds, and he was seeing this bird over in the farm for a few months before he died, and he was obsessed with trying to find out what the bird was. And one day he was coming home for lunch, and the bird was on the road in front of Matt and Rabbit, and he said the bird rose, and the span of his wings were the width of his jeep. And he, Declan, looking up, Declan would be the nature guy, trying to find out what the bird was. We still never found out. But I was going for reflexology and stuff to kind of
help.
And I went one day, and I was particularly upset. I was very bad that day, and she did a few things, but she used to also do these things with crystals and stones.
Mm-hmm.
And she was doing this thing, saying all these mumbo jumbo over me. And she said, when I get very upset and I'm alone at night, she said, and when I think of comfort, she said, I think of a big polar bear putting his arms around me and just holding me. And she said, I get fierce comfort out of that. So she said, do you mind if I do more of this? So I said, no. And I was closing my eyes and blah, blah, blah. And the next thing she said, I'm going to step out for a moment. And she went out. And I don't know, I started crying while she was out, and I just couldn't fathom why it was so bad.
Mm.
She came in and she said, what's wrong? I said, I don't know, I'm after getting a very strange feeling. Well, she said, I'm going to tell you something now. She said, I had to step out before I, while I was doing that, she said, I had my eyes closed. And she said, I had a vision of a big bird coming in through the window and hovering over you. And she said, it just was like he was saying, this is, I'm here. And she said, it went back the way it came. And I started crying. She said, worse. And I started telling her about the bird. I said, that's just strange. But like, I still didn't know whether this all happening. Like, so we had got married in Knock. So in August, a friend of mine had come to Knock with me for our wedding anniversary. And we missed the mass we wanted to go to. And we went into the second one. And the she's a lot older than me. And she was kind of just, you know, consoling me. And the priest went up on the altar and he said, we're here especially today now to pray for all the people that got married on today's date. And remember every one of them in their prayers and blah, blah, blah. She caught my hand. She squeezed it, I thought. And he said some lovely, I have it at home, but I've forgotten about it. But he said some lovely words about someone passing and how you're connected and everything. He said, if anyone wants it, it's up there. And I went up and picked it up. When I came down to the end of the church, he was below. And I told him we were married at Knock. And this was strange. I said, it's our wedding anniversary and I came in today. And he said, I think, he said, you're special. I think there's a book in you. So I thanked him. We did keep stay in contact. But I went over then, she was going to confession, and I went to the kind of adoration church. And I was sitting there and I was looking and thinking, and all of a sudden this came into my head. This was before the bird episode.
Yeah.
I was thinking about his headstone, and then out of the blue came in, I am the wind beneath your wings. Just came into my head. And I took out a piece of paper and I wrote it and put it into my pocket. So anyway, I just had it there, because why did it come into my head? So a few days later, I was up at my brother-in-law's house and we were discussing what to put on the headstone. And I put my hand in my pocket and I took it out. And I said, I want that put in the end of it. And all of a sudden, it all made sense. Fast forward on, I had my surgeries and we had different things done, and I had a son living in Cove, and Caitlin and I went out to see them, and we were coming home through Cove, and Caitlin had said she'd drive my Jeep. She wouldn't be used to driving it, but I was very tired. And she, coming through Cove, she was driving fast. And I said to her twice, Caitlin, please slow down. Twice I said it to her, and she just drove on. And I don't know whether you know Cove, but along by Fort Island, there's a big stone wall.
I do.
Coming along there, she lost control of the Jeep. The Jeep started going all over the road. And I put my hand in it, and I swung the wheel, and we were looking at the wall. And I just, this is it, we're going now. And she just managed to pull it back and stop. There was no other car in sight. We don't know how, why it skidded, why it stopped, why we were there. And she said, I'll get you out, I'm not driving. I said, you're driving. I said, you are not, I'm not taking over from you. And she started the ignition. And just as we took off, a big white owl flew the road ahead of us. And she said, ma'am, do you see that? And I said, do you know what that is? That's your father telling you to listen to your mother going forward. And they just be laughing at me like they used to say, oh, ma'am, Abba comes on the radio and you think it's Ned. But they have all seen it. And I don't know, is it the way they're not open to it? But the first Christmas, we went up to Edwards and I was coming home alone. They were all kind of doing their own thing. And I was kind of upset. I was saying, they're leaving me go home alone. They wouldn't go home and light the fire. They did offer, but I said no. And I come along into the village. I got this pain inside me. And I thought, how am I going to go home? And as I drove down past the graveyard, Abba, I love you came on. Oh. And I drove up our own. I'd be afraid going in there sometimes. In the door, into bed, not a thing.
Oh.
The fear was gone.
Because you knew.
I just knew. He'd never gone. And like I often hear, I'd often say, Jesus, Ned, would you ever do this? And I'd nearly hear, would you, for fuck's sake, let me have I don't need to get away from him. But I honestly believe now that I have gone through, I've diabetes now, I've had blockages, I've had breakages, I've osteoporosis, but I still feel perfect. I think that I've become stronger than ever. But I firmly believe it's because what I've been through, and I just feel it's taken me 10 years to kind of believe what really happened to me. And I could keep relating all these things to you. That could be over and over again. But it's taken me 10 years to really believe my own words. They're not gone. The energy that was there is still there. I've had I dream about him every night. But one particular night I had this dream of him being just across a stream and the most beautiful flowers. And Ned used shift trees rather than knock them. People couldn't believe he had this way about him.
Mm.
And he was just sitting there and he says, don't worry about me. I'm fine. I'd be waiting here. And just, it kind of like, I'm not running up and down to the church. I'm not holier than thou, but I just think if you have that deep connection with someone, like, I kind of say it this way. Say 100 years ago, somebody told us that you could speak to someone in Australia or text them and have a result in a minute, you'd have thought they were mad.
Yeah.
You would thought they were mad. So who's to say that they're not? There's not going to be further connection?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know? I used to always have this thing long before Ned dying of thinking, what happens to your brain or to your spirit when you die? Like, we see everybody dying, but you're the only one that knows what's inside in your own head. So what happens to that?
Yes.
So that's where I'm linked to it.
I'm on the same page as you. People have asked me over the years, what's your belief? I'm like, listen, and it's not something you need to get into with people too much, is it? Because everyone has their own beliefs and you can't make someone believe what you believe. But my belief is, if you think of emotions, they say emotion is energy in motion. That's what emotion means, energy in motion. If you feel worried, you can physically feel that feeling, right? That's a physical, tangible thing. If you feel angry, you can feel that rage. If you feel sad, you feel that heaviness. That to me is like, that's your soul. All those emotions and experience, where does that go when you when your physical body dies? Where does that go?
Yeah.
It doesn't die.
That's exactly.
That energy is still there. That's, we've the same kind of belief then. I believe that there, the energy and the soul remains. The body is gone, but the soul. And sometimes I know, sometimes it feels a little bit further away, but if you have that belief and connect to it.
But you have to have the belief.
Yes.
Because I believe, because I'm open.
Yeah, it happens.
Look, we had a family get together last Saturday. My parents would have been 70 years married.
Okay.
So we had the three generations at Mass, then went for a meal after. And then there was photos being taken and I was very good. But then my siblings all stood up to have a photo taken. The couples and me. And now while I was standing there, I was fine. I didn't really realise there was a tear rolling down my face. And my older sister just says, "Are you okay?" And I says, "Yeah, I'm fine." But it was the following morning when I woke and I just said, "God damn it, where are you?" I said, "I don't feel the sign anymore." And I said, "You've got to give me something." And the following day, there was a competition on the radio for tickets to Michael Bublé. And I just said, "I'll enter this." And the quiz was, or the thing was, apply for the tickets, but say who you take with you and why. And I was had an acquaintance before Ned died. She was only an acquaintance, but she got very close to me around the time of the funeral. And she just rang me. Ned died, was pronounced dead, I'd say about 10 o'clock or half 10 or something on a Tuesday morning. She took to ring me every Tuesday morning. And she just, after a few years, made me go to things with her. And she just stayed a constant.
Oh, wow.
And then we kind of went our separate ways for a while, but we're back again as close as ever. And I just said, "Do you know what? I'll enter the competition. I'll take Eileen." So I went to the competition and I said, "I'd take my friend Eileen. She was a constant support to me since I lost my husband and I'd love to share it with her." And I was just driving along the road and I heard the winner of the competition is Kathleen Barrett. And I thought, "Jesus, Ned, you did it again." And then I came home and just recently I joined the group Widows of Ireland. Caroline O'Brien started that. Brilliant, lovely person.
Yes.
But I've only met them once, which was Easter Monday. I went to a group meeting in Tralee and I walked in there and there was about 25 people, strangers. But I said it was like going home. We all sat, we all laughed, we all ate the meal. It was like as if we all knew each other. And I thought, why did I not find something like this
sooner?
We all shared our stories. And when I was leaving, a woman called me. She said, "What are you rushing away for?" And I said, "Nothing." She said, "Sit down there." And I stayed there for another 2 hours.
Wow.
And then I headed home. And that night, or Tuesday night, Caroline put up your post and I just answered it. And the next thing, you rang me. And I thought, "Nate, this is crazy." So, of course, when I started telling the lads that I had asked their father again and here I had two good things, they all said, "Go and do the latter now." But I said, "No, he doesn't want to make it that easy. I have to keep working."
Wow. I said that to you. All of a sudden, people had reached out. I didn't realise Caroline, lovely Caroline, put up a post saying Cathy's reaching out for guests. And you were the first one that I rang. There was about 20 responses. And I just was like, yes, I'll call her. Isn't that funny?
That's funny. But you see, what's meant to be is meant to be. Look, I eventually decided anyway, long story short, to get somewhere to the end.
Mm.
I did move into our retirement plan and I did finish it. And I loved my new house because I do house design and it was the first time I had a brand new house and I had it all. Beautiful glass wall, this, that and the other.
Wow.
But then I discovered the place was miles too big and I was rattling around in it and blah, blah. So something told me to say it to my son that would I not build a smaller house on the farm that Ned had done and that and himself and his wife agreed. And I was building it for about 3 years and I had to fight hard to get it. Because if you have a house already, planners aren't sympathetic. But I was lucky enough to get it. So then I said I'd sell the other house. Sad, but the good was gone out of it because we weren't able to share it.
Mm.
So that house was up for sale for a few months. Anyway, one morning, I got a phone call to say that they had a good offer. And I just drove up to the house and the sign was down. And I took a photograph and I said, your dad knew the house was sold before I did because he took down the sign. And sure enough, the sale went through and it'll be finalised next Tuesday. But
just all these.
Why did that sign fall? Now, you could say 100 reasons, but it was up the night before. It's like deja vu. You nearly feel, yeah, I've been here before, you know.
But it obviously brings you a deep sense of comfort.
Now it does. And it's like I said to Ed, after about 8 years, it was 8 years we went away. He went away with the lads, just his kids and us. And it was the first time I said, Edward, it's 8 years and that I'm not totally sad that Nate isn't with us. I have an acceptance.
Mm.
It took me that long. But it's taken me to now, to actually move into the house last July. And I didn't settle until Christmas. But the pride to look out the window, and it breaks my heart that Nate isn't there to reap the rewards of what he did. But I just think it was meant to be. I've got this complete sense of calm there. I was running for the last 10 years. Firstly, with illness, appointments, treatments.
But you obviously didn't want to sit with the reality.
I never wanted to sit with the reality. So if I kept running,
you wouldn't have to.
Whereas since I've moved into the house and since Christmas more than anything, I've got this huge sense of peace. Now, I was doing everything. Ned wasn't, he hated foreign holidays, he hated the sun. He said he worked in a glass house. Why would he, in a cab, why would he go to the sun? I went on my sun holidays, I went on retreats, meditation. I came back and they said, God, this change in you. I did everything to change and get through it. I did a life coaching course. I started coaching people. I had to give that up because I thought to myself I was going to say to them, what are you complaining about? You've no problems. And I realised that I thought there was nothing for me, nowhere to go when it was when I needed it. I was always gearing to be able to do something to give back. And I just felt this new group. And I said to the lads when I came home Monday evening, I called up to them and I said, this is the first bank holiday in 10 years I've enjoyed. And they were all saying, we're delighted for you, ma'am, you know. And we've another one on Monday now in Cove. But
that's the power of finding, which is so important to me. I really believe that people have to find other people who've been in your shoes. It's because no one can relate to you as much as, you know.
But I mean, I've come and I've seen young girls and their stories are so sad. And I can sit back and say, I was privileged. We'd be 50 years together next year. We had close on 40 years together. If you only got married at 40, you'd be only hoping for that anyway. So I always felt lucky. But I feel after hearing all those stories that I can turn around and say, thanks God. Rather than, why did you do this to me?
Mm.
I've had 4 wonderful kids. I have brilliant grandchildren. I have my lovely new house. I still have my career. I have an insurance for myself after selling the house. I'm in a good place. Yes, the biggest hole of all is a missing Ned. I'll never, ever, I sent you that poem I wrote for him 12 years ago or 10 years ago. I'll never get over losing him. But I feel if someone had said all what I've said today and how I feel after 10 years, if someone had said that to me 3 or 4 years or after it happening, I wouldn't have lost 10 years. Like, yes, 10 years have passed, but they still feel the blink of an eye.
I know what you mean, yeah.
But I've still gone from 53 to 63.
Yeah, but do you not think you kind of had to do that too, to figure it out in your own way? If someone told you, would you listen? Do you know what I mean?
Not at the start.
Do you know?
But
if I came to you when you're 3 years in and says, geez, Kathleen, you know, you need to be grateful for all you had together, you'd say, fuck off.
Probably would, but do I mean, I had gone down. I was actually going buying a retreat place below over the sea, and I was going to sell everything and buy a place where women could or men could just go for a few months to just process the grief. I nearly had everything sold. Only the house, the place I went to look at, was falling down. It was built in badly. And there was no way I was going to spend 600,000 on that and put my whole life at risk. But I was convinced that was my path. That there has to be more for the person.
100%. That's I do retreats for spousal loss.
Yeah, do you?
Yeah. Weekend retreats.
That's amazing. Yeah. See, I didn't know any of this.
I know. Not everyone knows, and that's okay. But they are, oh my God. And I hate talking about it on the podcast because it sounds like I'm trying to advertise it. I'm not, like, because people come if they come and that's it. But in particular, spousal loss, I think there's such a loneliness there. And the reason why I set it up is because my poor sister, when her husband died, before she died, you know, she was so young, like you say, she was 35, two small boys, her, you know, husband died. And I always remember her, like, she was like a lost little lamb going around the place on her own, or even if she had to, she was only alive for a year after he died, but if she had to go to a wedding or something, she was like, I'm like a fucking spare thumb. And she, even that, you know, lining up for the picture. And I just always saw, and then I got into this work. I set up a community, but I started to come across women and men, and I used to keep saying, oh, if only she could have met you. I always remember the first four, I met this beautiful girl from Sligo. She's been on my podcast. Her husband died in a car crash. And I go, oh my God, my sister would have loved you. And I met all these different ones. And I remember going, just randomly, I was like, would any of you like to go away for a weekend and do a retreat? And to this day, those four girls that I had met, they're best friends. Like, they have a WhatsApp group, they meet up, they go on holiday, they're always together. And that's happened over and over and over again, where they have come together on a long weekend away, look after themselves. It's love. You know what a retreat, everyone knows what a retreat is. You might do a bit of yoga, downtime, yeah, spa, all that kind of thing. But the key is that they become each other's, like, community. You have to have that. Otherwise, you're on your own. And you have friends, but they're going home to their husbands, maybe. Yeah. You have to find someone who knows what it's like, you know?
And that actually brings me to another point, because people, you say to me, you're young, you meet someone else, you this and that. And starting off, you think they were insulting you. But then you realise that they mean well.
Yeah.
But, like, I have another friend, and after 3 years, she was able to go into a relationship full on.
Yeah.
People are built differently.
That's okay.
But, like, all you know, hand on heart, that, as I say, the man that owns my heart can never be replaced. Nor could I ever give my heart to anyone else. But it's lovely to communicate with, say, even another man,
yeah,
that knew your loss,
yes,
that loved as deeply as I did.
Yeah.
And just to be able to, like you say, communicate.
Yes. Have a friendship.
Have a friendship.
Yeah.
And
I think that's missing in the grief world. Is that, like, most people just have to go and walk that road on their own.
On their own. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a lonely, lonely damn road.
I was going to ask you, do you feel lonely still? Do you feel loneliness?
Oh, huge. I'll clarify that now. the last month has got way better. And I again attribute it to the community that I've just joined.
That's great.
Some days you read the polls and you'd be saying, do I need to hear this today?
I know.
But the next day, you do need to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
But like the good days when I can nearly feel him on my shoulder already saying, there was one day I was driving along the road and something came into my head that he was telling me. And I thought, this can't be happening. This can't be you. I said, if it is, tell me something that only you and I would know. And no one heard this now, not even my kids. He came in and the answer I got, I'm here with the baby. Caitlin was a half twin. And at 12 weeks, I lost the half twin. And I always decided he was a boy and he was Christopher John. And you know, when you have a miscarriage, you can mourn. But when you go in thinking you're only having one baby and be told, oh no, there was two and you've lost one, you kind of come home feeling awful guilty because you never grieved that baby.
Mm-hmm.
So it was never really out there. But Ned was the only one that I ever said that to years ago. I feel guilty because we did lose a little baby. And Caitlin was born with a birthmark on her leg. And do you know what they said? It was the other baby sucking on her.
Oh.
And that thing, that out of the blue, that came into my head. So there again, no one probably even knew we lost the baby because...
Yeah.
Do you know, when I'd say Caitlin was a half twin now, they'd say, Jesus, do you know?
Yeah.
So that was something that only he and I knew.
Wow.
So again, it was, can I read this poem before we finish?
I would absolutely love you to.
Right. I wrote this 10 years ago when my heart was breaking.
Oh.
Silent tears continue to flow with a pain in my heart that will never go. I miss you, Ned, with every breath I take, all day long from the moment I wake. I lost my world, my joy, my life, and my reason for breathing when I became your wife. I struggled through for the family's sake, putting on a smile and a brave face. But the turmoil inside and the ache in my heart will never leave me while we're apart. I know you are here, I can feel you close, but I miss you holding my hand most. Your smile, your touch, your funny ways, and even your moods on your bad days. If I could just hold you one more time, I would tell you you're loved and you'll always be mine. We struggled together through good times and bad and shared with our family the love that we had. Bless you, my love, my wonderful man. I will soldier on the best way I can. I owe it to you for the life that we had and the wonderful years and the memories I have. One in particular I cherish the most. I'll never forget it. You held me so close. Our last dance by the fire on New Year's night, when you whispered you're loved for the rest of your life. Abba was playing the song I Love You, and you held me tenderly as if you knew. 4 days later, my world fell apart. I miss you, my darling, with all my heart. 10 years have passed since I wrote those lines, and nothing has changed but the passage of time. And that tells like it is. He's in here. And he'll be with me going down the road. And I know he will. So,
oh, that's...
I'm lonely for the person to touch. But I know he's here. And I don't care whether people think I'm daft. But I'd believe it till the day I die.
Good for you. Good woman. That's remarkable. Yeah, me bawling. The love, oh my God, the love, the love, the love, the love. It's just...
I think part of that was back in the day in the 80s. You know, if you got pregnant, oh my God, you were nearly... And I think we were together through that, like we had put a front. We were thrilled. And I think that bond made us stronger.
Yeah.
You know?
You overcame it all and...
We overcame it. It was never a doubt in our mind what we were doing, where we were going or what we wanted. We defied people. That was, we were kind of a bit rebellious at the time. Like, but that was us. And every obstacle that was thrown at us, we overcame. We overcame with laughing, with whatever. Just, as I said, we came from nothing, and to look around what where we become, and I just feel, what need you say? We're here for a good time, not for a long time. And to be fair, they say the death was like a saint's death because he never suffered. But I finish on this note that I'm glad that it was he went before me, because I wouldn't wish this pain on anyone. I'd have hated to think that his heart would have hurt like you have to hurt when you lose the love of your life. So I'm glad that as I had to go through that, not him.
Can I ask you one last question? When you die, do you believe you'll be reunited?
Yes. And I say that when someone, the counsellors, have said to me, we're humans, we're not meant to be alone. So stop ruling out meeting someone. But I say, what happens in the next life? If I did meet someone else, I said, no, what could I do? You know?
You have the belief you'll be together. He's just waiting for you.
Yeah. He's taking his rest, the long earned rest.
Oh.
And I could nearly see he's above there now, and he's raising a point to me and saying,
good girl.
Good on you.
Yeah. He'd be proud of you, wouldn't he?
He wasn't a man of many words, but he left me know that he was very proud of me. And on one particular occasion, my son's wedding, he wasn't a man for speeches. But he stood and said a few words that day, and he just turned and he said, I have to thank Kathleen for rearing the kids and doing a brilliant job. And like, I knew what it cost him to say that, because he wasn't a showy. Look, I was 21 and I had a baby and I was living in a mobile home, and he came in on my birthday. He had a bouquet of flowers and he couldn't bring it over to me and say, Catherine, he threw across. There you are now, don't say I didn't bring you flowers.
Oh.
You know? So for him to actually say something like that.
That's huge.
Yeah. He'd be proud, and he'd be very proud of the four kids and what we've done and what he's left after.
Yeah, legacy. Yeah.
My son, the eldest lad, goes up to the grave every Christmas morning or on his birthday. He takes a small drop of Powers, because Powers was Ned's tipple, and he'd always have a drink with Dad at the grave. So they have a belief as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know?
In their own way.
I don't like going to the grave, because the grave overlooks an estate where there's three man-made lakes. It's absolutely fabulous. But Ned drained all those lakes and was inside in the middle of them with his digger, and he took so much pride out of it and got them all, their lakes restocked again. And I stand and I look down at his grave and I think, they're still there unchanged, and you're gone. But again, that's a tribute to the man that was there.
Kathleen, it has been just such an honour to sit and listen to you today.
And thank you for having me.
Not at all. Thank you. Thank you to Caroline and Widowed in Ireland, is that group you mentioned.
That's right.
On Facebook.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming. My heart is full listening to you. And to Ned.
Thank you.
Family Flowers Only. Thanks to flowers.ie. 5-star luxury flowers. Approved by you. Delivered with care.
That's it for this week's episode. Thank you all so much for listening. Also, a huge thanks to our sponsors at flowers.ie for supporting the pod. Whether it's for a birthday, a thank you, or just because, flowers.ie really takes the stress out of it. You get that peace of mind with their video approval on every single order, and fast and efficient express delivery in County Dublin and surroundings, and next day delivery to all counties. With 15,000 5-star reviews, you know you're in good hands. So visit flowers.ie today, and don't forget to use that promo code 5-star to get €5 off. It's Ireland's highest rated florist for a reason. 5-star luxury flowers, approved by you, delivered with care. Thanks again to them and to you. I'll talk to you all next week.